This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, entitled Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home. And we're reading verse 23. Nanyam tata padma palashalochana Dukha chidam te mrigayami kanchana Yomrigyate hashta grihita padmaya Shriyeta yar anga vimrigyamanaya. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I did not find anyone who can mitigate your distress but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune. But the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is always ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. Purport. Suniti pointed out herewith that the benediction received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that received from the demigods are not on an equal level. Foolish persons say that no matter whom one worships, one will get the same result. But actually, that's not a fact. In Bhagavad Gita, it is also said that benedictions received from the demigods are all temporary and are meant for the less intelligent. In other words, because the demigods are all materialistically conditioned souls, although they are situated in very exalted positions, their benedictions cannot be permanent. Permanent benediction is spiritual benediction, since a spirit soul is eternal. It is also said in the Bhagavad Gita that only persons who have lost their intelligence go to worship demigods. Therefore, Suniti told her son that he should not seek the mercy of the demigods, but should directly approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mitigate his misery. Material opulences are controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead through his different potencies, and specifically the Goddess of Fortune. Therefore, those who are after material opulences seek the pleasure or mercy of the Goddess of Fortune. Even the highly placed demigods worship the Goddess of Fortune, but the Goddess of Fortune, Mahalakshmi herself, is always seeking the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyone, therefore, who takes to the worship of the Supreme Lord automatically receives the blessings of the Goddess of Fortune. At this stage of his life, Dhruva was seeking material opulence, and his mother advised rightly that even for material opulence, it is better to worship not the demigods, but the Supreme Lord. Although a pure devotee does not seek benedictions from the Supreme Lord for material advancement, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that pious persons go to the Lord even for material benedictions. A person who goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead for material gain is gradually purified in association with the Supreme Lord. Thus, he becomes free from all material desires and is elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Unless one is raised to the spiritual platform, it is not possible for him to completely transcend all material consciousness. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, was a far-seeing woman, and therefore she advised her son to worship the Supreme Lord and no one else. The Lord is described herein as lotus-eyed, Padma Palasha Lochanat. When a person is fatigued, if he sees a lotus flower, all of his fatigue can immediately be reduced to nil. Similarly, when an aggrieved person sees the lotus face of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately all his grief is reduced. A lotus flower is also an insignia in the hand of Lord Vishnu, as well as in the hand of the Goddess of Fortune. The worshippers of the Goddess of Fortune and Lord Vishnu together are certainly very opulent in all respects, even in material life. The Lord is sometimes described as Shiva Virinchi Nutam, which means that Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma also offer their respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this verse of Bhagavatam, and rather long but relishable purport of Śrīla Prabhupāda, we hear about Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Of course, we're speaking of Mahalakshmi. There's countless Lakshmis, or goddesses of fortune, who assist the Lord in his pastimes in Vaikuntha. Mahalakshmi, actually, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we understand that Mahalakshmi is actually an expansion of Srimati Radharani, the original goddess of fortune, Jayashri. Just as Krishna expands as Narayan, so Radha expands as Lakshmi. And she's always accompanying Lord Vishnu, or Narayan. She's eternal, but we also read in Vedic literatures how she made her appearance here in the material world in a very interesting way. The demigods and the demons came together. Actually, they didn't come together. They were at odds with each other, but they were churning the milk ocean with a churning rod. And from that churning, many amazing things came out. The elephant of Indra came out. Lakshmi Devi was also born from the milk ocean. And her name, Lakshmi, of course, in the minds of people in this world, is synonymous with money. And because money is the honey, people tend to worship Goddess Lakshmi without really understanding that her power to bestow opulence comes from Vishnu or Krishna. Whatever power a demigod has, it's not independent, it's actually sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Vedic literature say best to just worship the Lord himself. And that gives great pleasure to Lakshmi as well. When she sees her most lovable person, Vishnu or Krishna, is being worshipped nicely, then she naturally bestows her wealth or opulence upon the worshipper. That is the more logical way. But when you think of Lakshmi, you think of her like that, pouring forth from a pot, a clay pot, money or silver or gold, just like if you've noticed in our restaurant just outside here, there's different pictures, Shiva, and there's a picture, a painting of Lakshmi Devi, and she's sitting and she's holding this pot and just tons of gold coins are coming out. But her blessings take on other features as well. It's not that opulence just means money. Opulence doesn't just mean money. It's not that if you just have money that you'll be comfortable in life. Opulence is... there's many types of opulence. This is, he's in charge of all the opulence. In the Vishnu Purana, there's a stuti, or a eulogy, to Lakshmi, which can help us understand her many other opulences that she can bestow. And you might want to perk your ears up. This stuti was actually spoken by Lord Indra, who refers to her as the source of all opulence. And the Vishnu Purana states, before the shlokas begin, that in this world, poverty never dwells amongst those who recite the stuti daily. So Varanaika may be interested. Actually, just worship Radha Gopinath. But it begins, Indra Uvacha. This is a prayer of Indra. Indra, the demigod of heaven, said, I offer my obeisances unto the lotus-born mother of all beings, unto Shri, the goddess of fortune, having full-blown lotus-like eyes and reposing in the bosom of Vishnu. I offer my obeisances unto the goddess who is the abode of lotuses, who holds the lotus, whose eyes resemble the petals of a lotus, whose face is a lotus, and who is dear to the Lord who has a lotus navel. You are Siddhi, you are nectar, You are Shva and Svadha, O purifier of the worlds. You are the twilight, you are the night, effulgence, opulence, intelligence, faith, and Sarasvati. You are the knowledge of sacrifice, the worship of the universal form, and you are the master of occult learning. O beautiful one, you are the knowledge of Brahman, O goddess, and the bestower of the fruit of liberation. You are the science of dialectics, the three Vedas, Varta, the knowledge of chastisement. O goddess, this universe is filled with your gentle and terrifying forms. O goddess, who except you can dwell in the person of that God of gods, who consists of all forbearance, the bearer of the mace, who is contemplated by the jogis. O goddess, the three worlds, having been abandoned by you, were on the verge of destruction. Because of you, they have again recovered their position. O exalted one, men are endowed with wives, sons, houses, friends, grain, and wealth due to your constant glance. O goddess, freedom from bodily ailments, riches, destructions of enemies, and happiness are not difficult to attain for persons who view your glances. You are the mother of all creatures, as that God of gods, Hari, is their father, and this universe consisting of moving and non-moving entities is presently permeated by you as well as by Vishnu. O purifier of us all, if you forsake us, neither our treasures, nor our cows, nor our houses, nor our possessions, nor our bodies, nor our wives are secure. O you whose abode is the chest of Vishnu, if you forsake me, neither sons, nor friends, nor animals, nor ornaments can be mine. O spotless one, men who are forsaken by you are also forsaken by goodness, truth, purity, good character, and other virtues. And those who are glanced upon by you, even once, although devoid of any good qualities, are infatuated by all good qualities, such as character, lineage, wealth, etc. O goddess, he who is glanced upon by you is praiseworthy, accomplished, fortunate, intelligent, highborn, heroic, and possessed of power. O nurse of the universe, O beloved of Vishnu, all virtues, character, etc., immediately abandon him from whom you turn away. Even the tongue of Brahma is incapable of describing your qualities. O lotus-eyed one, be auspicious unto me. Please do not abandon me. Shri, the goddess of fortune, replied, I shall never turn my face from one who praises me every morning and every evening with this hymn. Lakshmi Devi Ki Jai. Jai. She's Vishnu's beloved. You don't have to be afraid. So it's clear that she offers many benedictions, and we need benedictions. We are poverty-stricken in this material world. So we can hope for some of her blessings. Of course, there's a downside to this, and that is that Lakshmi Devi is very fickle. She's chanchala. Restless. It's difficult to get her glance, difficult to get her favor. She doesn't give benedictions very easily, and what she gives, we can't hold on to for very long. However, there's an open secret as well, and that is that she's the very faithful and chaste wife of her husband, Narayan. And if someone worships Narayan, she's very much inclined to bless that devotee. This is the secret. To get Lakshmi's favor, you worship her husband. That is the object of her love and her meditation. So if you please him, then naturally she'll please you by giving you what is required here. Srila Prabhupada even states in the purport that the worshippers of the goddess of fortune and Lord Vishnu together are certainly very opulent, even in material life. Of course, those who are true Vaishnavas, worshippers of Vishnu or worshippers of Krishna, they don't necessarily worship Vishnu just to get Lakshmi's grace. They worship Vishnu for Vishnu's pleasure alone. and the benedictions of Lakshmi are a side benefit. Just like this movement, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Many devotees are engaged just in the activities of preaching Krishna consciousness, spreading the movement. Nevertheless, we see this movement is very nicely maintained in general. How is this possible? This is possible by the grace of Krishna. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham. For my devotee, I protect what he has and I provide whatever he lacks. Lakshmi's pleased. So though many devotees living in the temple don't hold full-time jobs, things are going on. By her grace, somehow the Lakshmi is coming through the congregation, through donations, or whatever the case may be, but it, not necessarily by our material expertise in business that this movement is successful. We don't have many vaishyas, we don't have many devotees who have degrees who are out there and successful maintaining. No, it is by her grace, because at least we're trying to please Krishna by the performance of the Sankirtan. But the point is, you will have her sustained blessings when you worship her husband, Narayan. So this is very nicely demonstrated. There's a saying that example is higher than precept. If there's a precept, if there's a proposition, if there's philosophy, that's very nice. But if you have an example of it, it convinces you more. If you have a philosophy, but you have an example of that point, then it's more convincing. Example is higher than precept. So what is the example? That by getting the favor of Lakshmi, by worshipping Narayan, one will be successful. There's a very nice example in that, in the Ramayana. In the Ramayana, we have the pastimes of Sita and Ram. Of course, Ram is an expansion of Krishna, and he appeared many millions of years ago to uphold his eternal promise to Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chaduskritam, to deliver his devotees, to kill the demons, and to reestablish the principles of Dharma. And like Krishna, or like any of Krishna's expansions, we hear that when the Lord comes, he's accompanied by his devotees. Prabhupada said, you'll never see a picture of Krishna alone. That's impersonal. He's always surrounded by a devotee or a group of devotees engaged in devotional service. Prabhupada said, absolute truth means God, the living entity, and the process of devotional service. So when Ram came, he brought his devotees from the spiritual world, from Ayodhya, and Lakshmi Devi accompanied Vishnu in his form as Narayan. Lakshmi became Sita. Together they performed their pastimes. Actually, Sita and Ram are the ideal grihastha couple, you could say. There's a nice example. There's an example there for every ashram. Nara Narayan Rishi for the brahmacharis, Sita Ram for the grihastras, Vranaprastas, Pritu, and his wife were Vranaprastas at the late stage, and of course Sannyas Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So everyone has a good example there in the pastimes of the Lord. So they were the perfect grihastra couple. Both transcendental personalities showing the grihastras the perfect path of the grihastra ashram. One should never think of them as mundane lovers. Just like Tribi has produced one CD, and on the cover of that CD is a questionable picture of Krishna and Radha. Of course, those of us who understand know that these are pastimes of love, but it may be a little bit misunderstood. We should never misunderstand. The Lord's loving pastimes are completely transcendental. They are pure, not to be misunderstood. Actually, one time, Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva, she saw Shiva chanting. He was really enthusiastic about his japa. Very enthusiastic, chanting his japa. So she inquired, Pati, whose name are you chanting? And Shivji said, oh, I am chanting the name of Ram. So Uma, his wife, said, well, where is he? Can I see him? So Shiva said, yes, actually right now he's in the Dandakaranya forest on the planet Earth. So Uma said, do I have your permission to go and see him? Yes, you can go see Lord Ram. Sure. So Uma went in a disguised form to the Dandakaranya forest, and she was wandering about and looking for Ram. She couldn't find him, but suddenly she heard this wailing, and this crying. Someone was crying and lamenting, Sita, where are you? Sita, my dear beloved wife, where have you gone? He's crying and crying. Heard this wailing of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so Uma went there and she saw Ram crying on the ground, wailing. Because it was Vipralamba Bhav, it was intense feelings of separation. She didn't really understand. She thought, oh, he's just like a mortal. He's just crying like a mortal. So she went back to Kailash and she said to her husband, she said, I saw him, but he was just crying. He's just a mortal. And Shiva said, no, you don't understand. These are transcendental symptoms of love. You don't understand. Go back and look again. Try to understand. So Uma went back to the Dandakaranya forest. And this time, she assumed the form of Sita. She made herself look like Sita. But when Ram passed by, being only attracted by the true form of Sita, he didn't notice her. So she had this realization, actually he's something transcendental. He can't be fooled. He can only be attracted by the goddess of fortune, Sita, or Lakshmi Devi. In this way she came to understand his transcendental personality. She was pleased. Yes, my husband is chanting very nicely. Name of this transcendental personality of Lord Ramachandra. So she went back to Kailash and she said, Pati, now I understand. He's completely transcendental. The symptoms of that he was manifesting were deep separation from his wife, Sita, the goddess of fortune. So Shiva replied, yes, Mata. She said, what? I'm not Mata, I'm Devi. Why are you calling me Mata? I'm Devi, I'm your wife. Husband calls his wife Devi. He never calls her by her first name. He calls her Devi. He may use the name, but often he's calling her Devi. And she refers to her husband as Prabhu or Pati, my husband. So, but this time Shiva said, Mata, Mataji, Maya. So she said, wait a minute, I'm not your mother, I'm your wife. And Shiva said, no, because you stood in front of my Lord as his wife, because she assumed the form of Sita. From now I'm going to call you Mata, because you appeared in front of my Lord as wife, so now I'm going to call you Mata. So she was very upset. Uma was very upset. Now don't call me. Your mother, it's a different relationship. I want to associate with you as your wife. She said, no, you appeared before my Lord as his wife, so I'm going to call you Mataji. So she became very disturbed, and that was one reason that eventually she committed sati. She gave her form up. But because the relationship between Uma and Shiva is also a transcendental relationship, it's eternal. And she took birth as the daughter of the Himalayas, Himavati, or Parvati. We have our Parvati. Parvati. We have Parvati Dasi. She took birth as Parvati. And eventually she was reunited with her beloved Shiva. So the point is that these pastimes are not something mundane. They're completely transcendental. Sita Ram's pastimes are the pastimes of the divine couple. And Sita's beauty, she's very beautiful. You see the paintings. You've never seen a painting of Sita not beautiful. Each artist is competing to make her look more beautiful than the other artists. This is the competition between the artists. They all want to make Sita very appealing to our eyes with her transcendental beauty. Nevertheless, she's attractive, Sita's attractive, to both the devotees and the demons. She's attractive to everyone. The demons only appreciate her beautiful form because of their lusty desires. Chanaka Pandit says, a hungry tiger sees a woman as dinner. A lusty man sees a woman as an object of his enjoyment. And a sadhu, he sees the same woman as Mataji. A woman is walking through the forest and tiger thinks, Mahaprasagovinde. So she's been eating prasadam for 7 years, so every 7 years all the cells in your body change. So she's thinking, oh, something nice to eat. A lusty man, he sees the same girl as an object to fulfill his material desires. But a saint whose heart is purified to the practice of, in particular, Krishna consciousness, he sees differently. There's no lusty feelings that are awoken in his heart. When he sees a woman, he's not agitated. He just sees her like mother. Oh, Mataji. Now, what was Ravana? Ravana wasn't an animal. Well, he was an animal of sorts, but he was a human being. He wasn't a saint. He was far from it. He was on the opposite end of the spectrum. He was the most lusty man. Just like yesterday we were in Harinam. And most people were appreciating Harinam, but there was a group of men who walked by, five or six men, very lusty men. And they came close to the Matajis and they were saying all sorts of nonsense things. And this is, although other girls in the street are dressed very inappropriately, our girls are mostly covered, but because they're very attractive, because of their purity, the men were looking at them, but not in the proper way, in a lusty way. Eventually they went away. So Ravana is the epitome of this principle of attraction to material nature. Just like Daksha. Daksha is a demigod, of course, but Daksha, he has very strong material desires. And Daksha means one who's controlled by sexual desires, actually. Daksha. So when Ravana saw Sita, he immediately thought, I want to kidnap her and I want to enjoy her, which he did. He did and he didn't. Of course, we know that the real Sita was hidden by Agnidev. But for the purpose of instruction, Sita was kidnapped, and then Ravana took her to his kingdom. Now, Ravana had subjugated the entire creation, well, the universe, you could say. The three worlds, just like Hiranyakashipu. So even the demigods were his servants. But we all know, because we've discussed many times the Ramayana, that although he had her in his garden, his Ashok garden in Sri Lanka, he couldn't touch her. As much as he wanted to, he couldn't touch her. He couldn't touch a hair on her head for the purpose of enjoying her. Why is that? Because actually he was cursed. When he was a young man, teenager, he violated one girl who was the very beautiful daughter of an illustrious sage. And when the sage found out that Ravana had raped his daughter, he pronounced a curse that if you ever touch a woman without her consent, your heads, because he had many heads, were all split into a million pieces. So this is how he controlled his senses, because he had this curse hanging over him. He couldn't touch Sita, because he knew if he touched her, his heads would explode. He had 10 heads, Ravana. So Prabhupada, very interestingly, he comments on this principle, that he said that in the same way, everyone is cursed in the material world. Because although people have money and riches, they can't be happy. Sita is Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. And just like Ravana wanted to enjoy her independently of Ram, people want to enjoy the kingdom of God without God as the Archbishop of Canterbury very appropriately said. They want to enjoy the kingdom of God without God. They want to enjoy what belongs to God without serving God. So materialistic people want to enjoy Lakshmi, Sita, like Ravana did, without Ram's permission. But they can't do it. No matter how successful you are in the material world, you'll never be happy. That's not the happiness. They say money can't buy love. It's not the money itself or the opulence that it brings. It brings you real happiness. There's an inherent fault in this formula. Because no matter how much material opulence a person has, he's never satisfied. This is what the materialistic person doesn't realize. Because the beggar on the street, the guy that's washing the windows on the street corner, we always drive into downtown Sydney, you see them, there's always the old guys out there washing. They're always thinking, I just need another dollar and I'll be happy. But the nature of material life is that Bill Gates, he's also thinking, I just need one more billion to be happy. He's not satisfied. He has billions and billions, but he's thinking, I need another billion. So one cannot be happy unless we use Lakshmi, unless we engage Lakshmi in the service of her worshipable Lord. So this Ramayana is not a myth, it's not just a story. And we shouldn't let it repeat itself. We should realize that Lakshmi is Vishnu's consort and she's not ours to enjoy but to use in the service of the Lord. And when she sees that, then she'll, as Prabhupada said, even the devotees of Vishnu can live a comfortable life. As we many times say, Prabhupada said, human beings are not meant to necessarily to live under nasty conditions like cats and dogs in order to achieve the perfection of life, Krishna consciousness. We can live relatively comfortably, but we have to know the science of how to do it properly. And that's described very clearly by Prabhupada here in the purport. And one final note, we must remember that the Lakshmi being spoken about here is Mahalakshmi. She's an expansion of Radharani, Jayashri, the original goddess of fortune. So as devotees, we don't worship Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi. We worship her in original form as Radharani. Although we have a very beautiful picture of Lakshmi out there, we're not doing any puja to her. It's not that we're taking the picture out of the restaurant and bringing it on the altar and worshiping her. No, we're worshiping Sri Radha Gopinath. Why? Because we know that Radha and Krishna's pastimes, because, as Prabhupada says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because of their sporting nature, are more attractive than the pastimes of Lakshmi Narayan in the opulent Vaikuntha planets. Actually, one time Lakshmi, Mahalakshmi, she heard about these pastimes in Goloka and she became very attracted. Oh, who wouldn't become attracted? The very intimate, loving relationship that the devotees in Goloka have with Krishna. So Lakshmi herself, she was thinking, oh, I want to be part of those pastimes too. I don't just want to be here in Vaikuntha with all this opulence. I want to live in the simple rural atmosphere of Vrindavan where people worship my Narayan in a very intimate way in one of five mellows as a servant, as a friend, as a child, as a lover. She became attracted to this Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So what she did is she thought, I will perform great penances and great austerities. By the performance of those penances and austerities, I'll gain entrance into Braj. So she did that. She performed penances and austerities for hundreds of thousands of years by the calculations of the demigods. But at the end, she was denied entry. She wasn't allowed into Vrindavan. She was very disappointed. So this is actually discussed in a chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Venkat Bhatta, the father of Gopal Bhatt Goswami. They were actually very good friends, Prabhupada says. Actually, Kaviraj Goswami says, they were very good friends. Mahaprabhu went there and stayed in the house of Venkat Bhatt. And they were always discussing transcendental subject matter. And they became very, they would sometimes joke with each other. So one time, Mahaprabhu inquired from Venkat Bhatta. He said, because Venkat Bhatta was a Sri Vaishnava, he was a follower of Ramanuja, who worshipped Lakshmi Narayan. So Mahaprabhu said, your worshipable goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, always remains on the chest of Narayan, and she's the most chaste woman in the creation. But one time she gave up all that transcendental happiness in Vaikuntha to perform austerities to join Krishna in the rasa dance. So Mahaprabhu's question was, although she's a very chaste wife, she wanted to associate with Krishna. She's the wife of Narayan, but she wanted to give her heart to another man in Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu was joking, of course. He said, this, she's not chaste. A chaste woman gives her heart to one man and one man only. Girl marries young and has her husband and serves him throughout her life. She has one man in her life and one man only. A typical chaste Vedic girl. So Lord Chaitanya is joking. He said, "But so what is this? Lakshmi wanted to leave the chest of Narayan to go to the forest with Krishna? Ha ha ha, what is this?" It's joking. Also that we could all ultimately understand these pastimes. So Venkatapati, he said, "Mahaprabhu, you know Krishna and Narayan are the same person. They're just wearing different dresses." That's actually what Prabhupada said in the purport. They're the same person wearing different... Ite chamsa kalo pumsha krishnashtu bhagavan swayam. That all the above mentioned incarnations, of the plenary portions or portion of the plenary, but Krishna's the original personality of Godhead. And all the other forms of Godhead are expansions, different moods. Just like, you know, you have different moods. Sometimes you get moody. Sometimes you're real happy. Next day you wake up, you're under the weather. Sky's not looking very good, it's raining, and you know, you had a plan to go on a picnic or go to the beach. You get kind of moody. And then by the afternoon, the sun burns away the fog and you become happy. You have your moods. Sometimes you get angry. Rah! Different moods, your personality. So Krishna has transcendental moods to his personality. When Lord Shyamasundar gets angry, who's that? Then he becomes Nrisingadev. Who's Nrisingadev? He's Krishna when he gets mad. One way of looking at it. So there's different moods to the person. He's a person. Krishna's not just a stone. He has his transcendental personality. So he has these different moods. So Narayan is one of the moods of the Lord, his majestic mood. It's the same person. He said, Mahaprabhu, it's the same person in a different mood, so she's not breaking her vow of chastity. So Mahaprabhu said, okay, all right, get the idea. Then Lord Chaitanya inquired, "My dear Venkatapati, why is it that Mahalakshmi was not successful in joining Krishna's pastimes?" So Venkatapati said, "Why that? What I don't understand, because he's a worshipping Lakshmi Narayan. He's being instructed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He can't claim to have the answer." So Venkatapati said, "I cannot enter into the mystery of this incident. I'm just an ordinary living being. This is the right answer. If you don't know, then don't give an answer. Just say, I don't know. Then you can hear the higher knowledge." So Lord Chaitanya replied that actually one can enter into Braj only by following in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Then you can attain the shelter of the lotus feet. And look at the gopis. The gopis are the most intimate lovers of Krishna. What was their qualification? They gave up everything for Krishna. "I know no one but Krishna is my Lord. He shall remain such, even if he handles me roughly by his embrace or makes me brokenhearted by not being present before me. He's always my worshipable Lord, unconditionally." This is the gopis. You could say the gopis' qualification for receiving the loving embraces of the Lord, that they were able to renounce everything for the pleasure of Krishna. But Lakshmi Devi, even after performing all her penances and her austerities, we hear from the Shastra, she was attached to her position, living on the bosom of Narayan, being the goddess of fortune. She wasn't thinking, "Oh, I can give this all up and just like the gopis live that simple existence in Braj, making, taking the cow patties and putting them together and cooking. No. Gopis even gave up their husbands, in essence, to go to the forest when Krishna called with his Venu, with his flute. She wasn't going to give up her husband. She wasn't going to give up her opulence as Shri, as the goddess of fortune. She couldn't follow in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, we can't fault her. Not that when you go out and you take prasadam now in the prasadam room and you see the picture of Lakshmi, oh, she was at fault. You can't think like that. She's Radharani, pleasing the Lord in one of his moods or one of his expansions as Lord of Vaikuntha. It's Lord's desire to enjoy in that particular way in Vaikuntha. He has pleasure. Just like your dad, he has his pleasures at home. He has his pleasures at the office. So Vishnu is Krishna at the office. That's his pastime. And he has his pastimes in this world as well. And wherever he goes, she goes with him because she's Anapayini. Radharani's Anapayini. She's never separated from Krishna. So he may take a different mood, say, okay, I'll go with you as Lakshmi, as the goddess of fortune. So don't fault Lakshmi. Oh, you couldn't make it to Braj. She's in Braj in her original form as Radharani. These are all transcendental pastimes. But we, in our heart of hearts, we should desire to serve him in his original form in Goloka. Because follow the leader. Who's our leader? Our leader is ultimately Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he came with his express purpose of introducing, well, the holy name, yes, but also for introducing the understanding of Braj Bhakti as the highest spiritual truth. Becoming unalloyed pure devotees of the Lord in Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna is a simple cowherd boy. And being so, exchanging very intimate loving dealings with his devotees. So we also have to find a resident of Vrindavan to follow. If that's the principle, because Lakshmi couldn't follow a resident of Vrindavan, we have to find, we have to go around and search for a resident of Vrindavan that we can follow to enter into. We don't want to make that quote-unquote mistake. We have to follow, Mahaprabhu said, you have to follow in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan and follow not just in principle but in heart to get into Braj. So we have to go find a resident of Vrindavan, but you don't have to look very far, just look to your right. I look to my left, you look to your right, and you see Srila Prabhupada. No doubt Srila Prabhupada is a very intimate associate of the Lord in Braj. We don't know in which particular capacity, but we have no doubt that Prabhupada has come from Goloka Vrindavan because he spoke of it very fondly. And from time to time, when he would speak about Vrindavan, he would speak about the residents of Vrindavan, like gopis, or he would speak about the unfathomable mercy of Lord Chaitanya, who's Radha and Krishna combined, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahi Anga. One time in Mayapur, Prabhupada was speaking how kind Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was to bring all the Western boys and girls to Sridhar Mayapur for their purification. He went into ecstasy. He was crying, he couldn't speak. After a few minutes, one devotee started singing, Namo Om Vishnu Badaya Krishna Prashvaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini. And later on, some devotees were very disturbed. You should have let Prabhupada remain in that samadhi as long as he desired. So there was an argument going on. No, Prabhupada wanted to give the class. The class was stopped, actually. Later, they asked Prabhupada, so what should be done? And Prabhupada just kind of blushed and looked at Hare Krishna. He said he wanted this. He was embarrassed. But from that, we can understand a very intimate Rupanuga, follow in the footsteps of Rupa Goswami, who made it very clear what is the goal. So we have our resident of Vrindavan to follow. And if we follow, by his grace, one day we can enter into Goloka. Already he's training us by giving us the worship of Shishi Radha Gopinath. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Mahalakshmi Devi ki, Oh Premanandi.